This is Rick Malone for the San Francisco Symphony. Richard Wagner was the first multimedia artist single-handedly changing opera into a fusion of drama and music and spectacle, and at the same time expanding the language of the orchestra, drawing from it sounds that had never been heard before. For decades, Wagner had dreamed of what he called the artwork of the future, or Gesamtkunstwerk, the totality of art, an aesthetic ideal that would draw together music, drama, poetry, design, and architecture into an artistic whole greater than the sum of its parts. The result of his vision is one of the towering achievements of Western art. Four operas, or as he liked to think of it, three operas and a prologue, totaling almost 16 hours of spectacle drawn from Teutonic and Nordic legends. The Ring of the Nibelung. It took Wagner 26 years to complete his Ring cycle, from his first sketches of the libretto, which he wrote himself, to the final notes of Götterdämmerung, the climax and denouement of the cycle. It also took the construction of a special theater in a relatively nondescript town in Germany to realize his dream, and the Festspielhaus in Bayreuth, which opened in 1876, is still, in many ways, the center of the operatic universe. Everyone who came in contact with the Ring cycle that inaugurated the new theater was astonished. After all, they were experiencing not only the cycle as a whole, but also the totality of the experience. Critical response ranged considerably. "The German nation has nothing in common with this appalling disgrace," one critic lamented. Others applauded Wagner's audacious accomplishment. A skeptic who had been won over wrote, "Bayreuth is without doubt the mightiest individual achievement that one could ever imagine." From its first performances, The Ring has provoked everything from rapture to outrage, puzzlement and confusion to inquiry and debate. The Ring is so deep and touches on so many archetypes of human experience that many have seen their reactions change with each Ring experience, paralleling changes in their personal circumstance, world politics, and other variables. The legends and archetypes Wagner chose for his tale came from old German Nordic tradition, specifically a group of Icelandic Eddas and Sagas, an Old Norse prose narrative, and the Middle High German epic Das Nibelungenlied. He processed this material through his own ultra-romantic sensibilities, resulting in a highly stylized text that evoked its ancient roots while still resonating with his audience. One way to get a grip on Wagner's Ring is to follow the progress of the Ring itself, as it moves through what Sir Arthur Sullivan of operetta fame described as an array of thieves, liars, and blackguards. Everybody thinks they want the Ring, but when they get it, it leads to no good. It was originally forged out of gold stolen from the Rhine maidens. In Das Rheingold, it is in turn stolen by Wotan, the king of the gods, so that he can use it to ransom back the goddess of youth, who is being held captive by two giants he had hired to build his lavish palace, Valhalla. But when the giants receive this ring as ransom from Wotan and return the captive goddess, one of them kills the other rather than share this valuable treasure. Part 2 of The Ring, Die Walküre, focuses on the love affair of Siegmund and Sieglinde, who later find out that they are brother and sister. Siegmund plots the death of Sieglinde's husband, and Wotan instructs his Valkyrie daughter Brunhilde to protect Siegmund in the impending fight. But when Wotan's ever-nagging wife protests, he reverses his instructions. Brunhilde does her best to save Siegmund, but being the top god, Wotan naturally prevails, shattering Siegmund's sword, which was once his own. Siegmund dies in the struggle, and Brunhilde shepherds the newly pregnant Sieglinde to safety, predicting that her son will someday reassemble the shards of Siegmund's sword into a mighty weapon. To punish Brunhilde for disobeying him, Wotan plunges her into a magical sleep and surrounds her with a circle of fire, where she is condemned to remain until she is saved by the bravest of all heroes. The third opera, Siegfried, is named after that son of Siegmund and Sieglinde, who's been raised in a cave, learning about his illicit origins and the prophecy about reforging the sword, which, indeed, he manages to do. Here's where the ring comes back in. Siegfried slays the dragon guarding the gold and takes the ring from its cave to the mountain where Brunhilde has been sleeping for so many years. Wotan tries to block his progress, but Siegfried shatters Wotan's spear with his own magic sword and scales the rocky summit, where he awakens Brunhilde with a kiss and they fall in love. Finally, we come to part four of the ring, Götterdämmerung, the Twilight of the Gods. The clairvoyant Norns have just foreseen that the world and Valhalla itself will be consumed by fire. Morning dawns on Brunhilde and Siegfried. The cellos represent the darkness just before the dawn, followed by a brass fanfare indicative of Siegfried and yearning clarinet and bass clarinet figures suggesting Brunhilde. The ring is full of these musical signatures, which Wagner called leitmotifs, each one signaling a character, an idea, or an object, so that we can follow the progress throughout the operas. As the scene brightens, Wagner precisely notes the moment of the sunrise. Siegfried sets off on a journey up the Rhine into a nether realm of evil characters who scheme to destroy the lover's happiness. From her mountain perch, Brunhilde watches him sail away. This is the interlude between the prologue and Act One, Siegfried's Rhine Journey, in which we sense the hero's eager optimism as he surges along the waves of wind instruments, finally disappearing into an ominous future. Later in the opera, under the influence of an evil spell, Siegfried returns to Brunhilde in disguise. He had given her the ring, but now takes it from her. Brunhilde, who doesn't realize that her beloved is enchanted, plots to murder him. After his death, his body is borne away in Siegfried's funeral music, the interlude between the second and third scenes of Act III. This section is full of themes associated with the other characters, as well as with the sword that has played a role in their destiny. By this point, the accomplices in the murder have quarreled violently over the ring. Brunhilde ends up with it, realizing the horror of the situation she has helped fuel. She has a funeral pile built for Siegfried, removes the ring from his finger, and rides her horse into the towering blaze, carrying the ring. This is the famous immolation scene, in which flames leap to the same motif that had accompanied her sleep, surrounded by a ring of fire. Brunhilde sings with dignity, wisdom, and even joy. As the scene unrolls, the Rhine overflows its banks, and the ensuing flood drags everything underwater, including the Golden Ring, leading it back, full circle, to the Rhine Maidens. Valhalla is in shambles, and the race of the gods with it. Their city burns in the distance as the gold is finally restored to its rightful owners. The final curtain falls on the gods, and Brynhilde joins her beloved Siegfried in death. Wagner, who was nothing if not confident, knew exactly what he had wrought. In a letter to one of his closest friends and supporters, he wrote of his libretto in progress, "The whole will become, out with it, I am not ashamed to say so, the greatest work of poetry ever written." This is Rick Malone for the San Francisco Symphony.